have probably 5 minutes of my time for rebuttal. This case basically has little in controversy as to the facts. Mr. Nathleek, it also divides itself into three separate factual time patterns or periods of Mr. Nathleek's life. The period in which the misconduct occurred, with the exception of registration problems that existed from 97 to 2000, which have been cured and fines paid, the period of time during which the conduct that brought us here occurred was August of 96 through November of 1996. Prior to that, to just briefly give you Mr. Nathleek's background, he was admitted in 1977. He practiced in Columbus in a solo practice, office-sharing positions from 1977 to 1990, basically in a solo practice, doing things on his own, but establishing a moderately good practice. He then lost his two primary corporate clients. That caused him to relocate his practice to Pickerington, where he began over a period of time, a year or so, moving his practice from his home into an area and attempting to get a practice restarted at that point in his life. In late 1995, as the evidence shows in this case, he was suffering from significant fatigue, back pain, throat problems, and some other medical disorders. In 1996, which is when his CLE problems had already begun in 95 and through 96, in March of 1996, he was diagnosed with a blocked artery, and in April of 96, he had an angioplasty. He was the primary care provider both for his father and for his stepmother, and his father died on September 14, 1996, a date which overlaps the period during which this conduct occurred. The conduct pertains to a CLE suspension that was put in effect on August 12, 1996, and he was reinstated on November 26, 1996. From November 26, 1996 to date, again with the exception of the registration problems, he has had no problem in the practice of law. And to the contrary, as the panel found on page 6 in its report, he's regained his health and that the distressing family concerns no longer exist or have been overcome. And as the character evidence provided both by two live witnesses and also by four character letters evidences, he has established a very good reputation in the Pickerington area and a very good and effective practice and a number of clients. Very much unlike what existed in August of 1996 when he received the CLE suspension. At that point in time, he had approximately 10 clients. And Mr. Nathleek made some mistakes. He made them under the circumstances that existed at that time. And the question before this panel today, and the reason we are here today, is to determine what sanction is appropriate under the totality of these circumstances. If we look at the fact patterns, it's August 12th of 96, he receives the CLE suspension. On August 29th, not many days after that, he did file a document with the probate court initiating a new estate in the Cloverdale estate. That was wrong. He has admitted to it and has admitted that he should be sanctioned for the same. His father passed away on September 14th, and in September of 96, he met with the executrix of one estate that he had done work in before, that he did no other work for during the suspension time, but he met with her, with the accountant that had been handling the estate matters, and with the beneficiaries in an effort to answer questions and assist them in making distributions of the estate assets. He did no other work in that matter. In regard to that matter, however, he failed to notify both, or has no evidence and has admitted that he failed to notify either that executrix or the executrix in the Adams estate, Mrs. Adams, of his suspension. Those events would have occurred prior to his filing his affidavit of compliance with this honorable court on October 25th, 1996. The biggest issue...
Well, because the relator, as you know, makes the point on page 8 of its brief that the conduct with respect to the estate, at least some of it where he signed attorney for applicant, occurred prior to the time that he filed the affidavit with the court here saying that he had advised all of his clients that he couldn't practice. What's your response to that? Is that correct?
That is correct, Your Honor. When he filed, what brought this case was a complaint that was filed with disciplinary counsel indicating a suspicion or belief that Mr. Nathick had filed a number of complaints while he was suspended. And he cooperated, and this is what was discovered, was that there were these matters that were involved, including his having filed this one estate a few days, less than 20 days after the suspension. And I can't give, it's not justified. It's wrong.
He only had 10 clients, I think. Is that
right?
He only had 10 clients?
He had approximately 10.
He would have known whether he advised them. It's different than if he had 200 clients, I guess.
I think it's different. It's also different, though, if your father's in the process of dying and you're the primary caregiver and the stepmother's in very poor health and you're the primary caregiver and you've just come out of angioplasty surgery earlier that summer. And that's what I'm saying. His state of mind is what we're looking to, both in having filed that, and he was wrong, there's no question. And he was more wrong, and that's not a good way of saying it, but when he filed the affidavit of compliance with this court, and he filed it late, it should have been filed within 30 days, but it was filed later. And I think that again goes to the state of mind that Mr. Nathick was in back in the late August through October of 1996.
Well, that state of mind, though, wouldn't be a reason that he actively engaged, if that's what we call this,
right,
actively engaged in the practice of law. It might explain that he overlooked something, but to actively engage in the practice of law when the Supreme Court has said you may not do that, that we can't say, well, he had personal problems for that, can we? I mean, to excuse that conduct?
Your Honor, that's part of what we're here for today. I don't think that we can say, and nor is Mr. Nathick arguing, that he was justified because of his personal problems and what he was going through with having going ahead and filed one estate. He took no other work, did no other work in that matter. He simply filed the document to get the estate started. But he did file it. He filed it as the attorney in the matter, and he should not have done it. And he acknowledges that that was improper. The real issue, not just the only issue, but the most critical issue I submit in this case, though, is the issue concerning his state of mind when he filed the affidavit of compliance. Because as you know, that affidavit had to indicate that he had complied with this court's order of suspension from the CLE suspension. And there is no question, it's not disputed, that we now know that that affidavit was not truthful.
The only issue before us really is the terms of the discipline. Is that correct?
It's the term of the discipline, but I think that that issue is compounded or at least parallels the question of whether filing the false affidavit is also a violation of DR 1102A4, a dishonest act, or just a 1102A6 reflects adversely on fitness to practice.
That's where I was going with the question. You have the relator saying that he violated DR 1 and 3 and Gov Bar Rule 4, I think, or 6 maybe. A cumulative compilation of these violations, did they all arise out of the same transaction, and should they be considered one as opposed to separate violations?
Well, on the most important of these, which I think is the filing of the false affidavit with the court, if he knowingly and intentionally filed a false affidavit with this court, that's very serious conduct. If it was, as the panel has said,
guaranteeing at least a 6-month suspension.
I think that it well might. Yes, I don't dispute that. But trying to address and stay focused on your issue, what the board found was that in count 2, the failing to file was a violation of 1102A4, which is, and then in, they also found under 1102A6, adversely reflecting on fitness to practice, that involved count 2 as well. What we believe is that the evidence does not show by clear and convincing evidence that he willfully or knowingly submitted a false statement. He clearly submitted a false statement. And we don't dispute that he should be disciplined for submitting a false statement, whether it was, there's language here from the panel, recklessly done, unintentionally done. That could make a difference. If it was intentionally and knowingly submitting a false affidavit, 6 month suspension is clearly going to apply. If it was an error in judgment, an error in recollection, an error in belief, and I believe that's what we have to look to, and the panel at page 4 found, they stated clearly, they said, clear and convincing that he was reckless in that regard at best. Well, I submit that if we look at GovBar Rule 4, which requires a willful violation of the Code of Professional Responsibility, that a clear and convincing evidence that he was reckless is not the same as a clear and convincing evidence that he knowingly or intentionally submitted a false affidavit to this court. When you look at the language of the affidavit of compliance, he doesn't certify in that or affirm under oath in there that he served everybody with a certified mail letter as the court orders. He clarified in there and stated that he did it by hand delivery with individuals. That wasn't in compliance with the order, but I think it shows that when he was submitting that affidavit, he was attempting to do it with his best recollections. And he had not preserved or kept copies of these letters in his state of mind at that point in time. And in fact, at this point in time, at the hearing some years later, he had to obtain a letter that had been hand-delivered to, I'm only coming up with Woody, his accountant, that he had hand-delivered to him and that Woody had preserved. And I think that goes to
the fact that the panel found and the board found clear and convincing evidence. Move it from the level of negligence or recklessness to intent?
Well, their specific language is clear and convincing evidence that he was reckless.
I read it.
That's what they found clear and convincing.
Well, Mr. Caldwell, you missed a little, though, didn't it? That he was reckless in that regard at best.
At best. Now, that's what I stated when I read it a moment ago, and it is at best. But that's different, and this court has read many opinions from the board and has written their own opinions, and when they find somebody has, by clear and convincing evidence, misled, misrepresented, it's generally specifically stated. I think the panel had trouble with it. I think they were looking at this man who had gone through a bad time. It doesn't justify it, nor is he arguing that it does. Had gone through a bad personal time, and they were looking at it and trying to determine. And they were offended that a false affidavit was filed with this court. And rightfully so, as should this court. But what we're saying is that it was not an intentional or knowing that he had done what he did at that time. He filed an affidavit under oath, believing it to be true at that time. When these issues came up some many years later, he was unable to prove it. He did acknowledge, even when he filed the affidavit, though, which I think shows a state of mind of attempting to be forthright and candid with the court, that he had notified certain of these people by hand delivery as opposed to certified mail. The board also found, the panel and the board, used language whether intentionally or negligently false. Again, I think this mitigates against a finding that they found by clear and convincing evidence that he had knowingly and willfully submitted a false affidavit to this court.
The board and the relator say 6 months actual. On page 9 of your brief, you say a lesser sanction would, under the circumstances, inadequately promote this principle. What do you mean by that? What is your recommendation?
Our recommendation would be a 6 month suspension with all of the 6 month suspension stayed. And a part of the reason, a very important part of the reason for staying all of it, is that the character evidence and the mitigating evidence shows that Mr. Nathlick now has, and since 1996 has had and developed a very good practice. Many clients in the Pickerington area depend upon him. It is a solo practice. If he is suspended for one day, those individuals are hurt, his practice is hurt. Did he bring it on himself? Yes, that's clearly true. But is that a type of sanction that's needed under the totality of the circumstances in this case? And we say that it is not. It's 5 years later, and any actual suspension will harm him. One of our arguments has been that he does not report to be any threat to the public today. I think that's probably conceded. It's also conceded that that's not the end all of the question. I think the key issue is whether there's clear and convincing evidence that he intended to mislead this court. And I would save my rebuttal time. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kettlewell. Ms. Sigmund.
Good Good morning. Gloria Sigmund, Assistant Disciplinary Counsel for Relator. Chief Justice, members of the court, Mr. Kettlewell. We obviously are in agreement with Mr. Kettlewell that there is not much, if any, factual dispute in this case. And we are here in complete agreement with what the board recommended. And that is that the respondent in this case and his conduct warrants a 6-month suspension. The respondent in this case had a continuing legal education requirement. He ignored that. The respondent in this case, under GovBar Rule 6, Section 1A, was required to register with this court, and he ignored that. The respondent was ordered upon CLE suspension to notify all of his clients, which he also ignored. And he also ignored the order in the manner in which he was to notify his clients, which he has admitted and is in the record before this court. And in his affidavit of compliance that he filed with this court, he affirmed that he had done all of those things which he had not.
Would you address Mr. Kettlewell's point on that particular matter about the required standard of willful versus the finding of the panel that this was done at most recklessly?
It's Relator's position that whether the word voluntary, willful, intentional is used, that the board relied on, in their opinion, that this was a conscious act. A conscious act is an intentional act. It's voluntary. We have not argued that he intended to violate the rule. We argue that there was nothing but voluntariness in this affidavit that he filed. Mr. Kettlewell himself agrees.
Is it pertinent that it is an affidavit that indeed the information is given under oath?
Very pertinent. He had an affirmative duty.
Mm-hmm.
In the giving of that affidavit and providing it with this court.
So is recklessness, do you then conclude that recklessness in this scenario, context of a sworn affidavit is the equivalent of willful?
Reckless disregard, it would be Relator's position that a reckless disregard for that affirmative duty and the other rules that this attorney was bound by is the equivalent of a willful intentional act, not to violate the rule, but to engage in the conduct. There is nothing mitigating about Mr. Natlick's state of mind in evidence in this case. We have other health problems and family concerns, but nothing about his state of mind.
Thank you.
The question in this, and there is no dispute about the other violations that Mr. Natlick has committed, and it comes down to this conduct in filing the affidavit. And we have had nothing on the record to indicate that there was anything mitigating about his state of mind. In fact, contrary to Mr. Kettlewell's argument, it's Relator's position that the conduct that Mr. Natlick engaged in didn't end when he was reinstated in November of 1996, because he knew he had a continuing duty to register with this court. And for the years of 97, 98, 99, and until February of the year 2000, Mr. Natlick ignored that rule and was not registered.
Is that we've seen an increase, it seems to me a slight increase, in lawyers who have been suspended continue to practice law. Would it be fair to describe that after they received an order from the court saying, you know, you may not practice law, is that contumacious conduct? Is that kind of conduct for which, in a different forum, we would say the person is in contempt of a court order? Or we don't call it that in the discipline system, but we discipline as we are here. Is it like contemptuous actions to the court, do you think, or not? Is it below that? Is it lesser degrees?
I believe that it at least is the equivalent of that. It's It's conduct when one enters the bar and is admitted into the bar and one is aware of all of the rules and the requirements for holding this license that we are given. You are held up in society. And Mr. Kettlewell's concerned about protection of the clients and how his clients now may be harmed by a six-month suspension. What is the message, not just to the bar, but to society and their public interest in the integrity of this position, if we don't sanction those who violate the very rules by which they are entitled to practice? It's Relator's position that there have been a lot of cases with worse conduct, but this is not a limited instance. This is an ongoing disregard, conscious of the rules that we are required to abide by in order to practice law. And if this gentleman had not had a license, this would be an unauthorized practice of law, which is in effect what he did. He was at a meeting in September after he received notice of his suspension. He met with the executrix of the estate and did not bother to mention to her during that meeting his recent CLE suspension that he was aware of. Judge Belskis in the probate court in Franklin County made us aware of the filing of the application to administer a brand new estate subsequent to his being suspended. So this is a conscious disregard, this is willful conduct, and this is intent to engage in the conduct he did. And therefore, when he filed the affidavit with this court, there is nothing unwillful about that fact. Mr. Kettlewell said that his client was attempting to be completely honest in his affidavit. And so he wants the court to believe in some instances there was something less than willful, and in some instances he was willful in being honest and remembering he didn't comply with part of the rules by serving these people with certified notice and giving the court proof of that. And it's Relator's position, at a minimum, and it is also the board's, at best, this conduct warrants a six-month suspension with no time off. If there are no further questions, thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sigmund. Mr. Kettlewell, you've saved a minute of your time. Just about enough time to answer my question to Ms.
Yes,
Sigmund about contumacious conduct.
Is it contemptuous?
Yeah, is this like a contempt action? I mean, in conduct, the court says you may not practice law, the lawyer continues to practice law. We don't call it contempt, but it really, it's the same kind of conduct, is it not, or am I missing something?
No, I think if somebody violates a court order, one of my former clients just recently got cited, they will be held in contempt if they don't surrender their certificate of admissions. And I think a violation of a court order is subject to the court holding them in contempt. The increase, I believe, in the prosecution or discipline of lawyers for engaging in the practice after suspension is a product of much better enforcement by the Office of Disciplinary Counsel in those types of matters and looking into things much better. I can't say that there is not, in fact, an increase along that line, but I don't see it in my line of practice. One issue that hopefully someday this court may address is not having suspensions be effective the moment they're announced by this court, because lawyers don't know if they're going to be suspended. They think it may be a public reprimand. They can't shut their practice down, and yet if they may be in the middle of a trial the day the order comes up. I don't mean that would have justified. I don't mean that justifies what went on here. But I would point out that the panel did find that he has regained his health, that the distracting and whatnot family concerns no longer exist. He is coping well with those matters. And I would submit to you the dissenting opinion in a recent case stating that an individual has recovered and turned their life around. They are now in full compliance and that they believed mistakenly that they were entitled to continue to practice law back in 1992. It's a statement that can apply in the facts in this case. I believe that he intentionally, I believe that he intentionally submitted an affidavit that he believed to be truthful at the time, and that it was not an intentional act of lying to this court, and that the other conduct that he has admitted to is something that does warrant a six-month suspension with all of it stayed, and that's the issue that is now in your hands. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.